Am I supposed to read all this?
My name is Gretchen Theus. Today's date is May 15th, 2018. I'm recording this interview in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm speaking with Ron Stainerson, who is my father-in-law. Introduce yourself, Ron.
Like she said, I'm Ron Stainerson. I'm from Marengo, Iowa, and visiting Cincinnati.
Fantastic. We're here today to talk about your service during Vietnam. And first of all, we want to know, what were your service dates? We have listed
April 65 to March of 71.
Right, that was your total time in the service.
Right.
What? When did you serve during Vietnam itself?
December 66 to November 67.
And what was your rank during your service?
I entered Vietnam as a second lieutenant and was a first lieutenant coming out.
Great.
If I would have re-upped, I would have been a captain the next day, but I would have stayed 1 year stateside, and then I would have been back to Vietnam.
Gotcha.
I elected to stay home.
I don't blame you. Which units did you serve? You were the Bravo Company, Battery B, 3rd Battalion, 34th Artillery, 9th Division, 5th Army. That is a mouthful. And you served as an artillery forward observer for that unit. And that was from December 66 to April 67.
Mm-hmm.
Then you were an air artillery observer from April 67 to May 67. You flew aerial missions to support combined ground forces. You flew over 2,500 miles, more than 50 flight hours. And for that time period, you were awarded an air medal and two oak clusters.
Yes, that would have totaled 150 hours.
Wow. Then later you became a fire direction officer.
Back on the ground.
Back on the ground. Mm-hmm. From June of 67 to November of 67. And you served in Charlie Company, Battery C, 2nd Battalion, 4th Artillery, 9th Division, 5th Army.
Yes, that's correct.
Good gracious, that's a lot. All right, so when you decided to enlist in the Army, were you drafted or did you actually enlist?
Well, we were had numbers, and my number was going to come up anyway, so I was going to be drafted. So I thought I'd pick the time rather than them, and I volunteered for the draft.
Gotcha. Why did you choose the Army?
Well, I wore glasses, and they were fairly thick already, so I knew I wouldn't be in the Air Force, and I wasn't interested in the Marines, and I don't like water that well, so it left pretty much the Army.
That's what was left, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did you tell your family and your friends that you were joining the Army? Did you just
go
home one day?
Far as the folks, I just told them. They knew that I was probably going to get drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I was in college at Iowa State, and I wasn't interested in it because they had my folks had me in agricultural stuff, and I knew I wasn't going to be on a farm anywhere in my life. So I elected to volunteer for the draft, and I told them.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the same thing.
Great. How, when did you, or how did you tell your family that you were going to be deployed to Vietnam? I'm sure they assumed that that's how the course of events would go.
Well,
but
it was in all of the news that when a division goes over, the planning's already out there and everything. I was a part of the 9th Division. And it was going to go over as a full division all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So word was out that we were going to go. Time, we didn't know exactly just when, but they announced it. And when I let them know, probably a month, month and a half mm-hmm. before we were deployed to go.
Mm-hmm. When you were there, did you write letters home very often?
Not often enough, according to my mother. but it was quite often from me because I don't like to write letters. So so that's enough to keep them informed.
Gotcha. Enough to make them sort of happy. Mm-hmm. When you wrote letters home, did you request anything special to be sent back over to you? Any care packages or anything like that, maybe?
Well, they were always asking what we needed, if they needed anything and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I asked for some things. Probably one of the most enjoyable things while we were over there was the Jiffy Pops. She sent a whole case of Jiffy Pops, and that was great to pack that along while we were on maneuvers and, you know, mm-hmm. being out a week or two. It's fun to sit around a whole fire from your peanut oil can and cook up some popcorn.
Right. A little taste of home, as they say.
Yes, yes.
That's nice. That's nice. What about any particular, like, bird whistles or anything like that did you request? I think I remember hearing something about that.
Yeah.
Bird calls or anything?
Yeah, she sent over some clickers.
We used that to
let each other know during the dark of night, you know, that mm-hmm. we're around. The bird whistles were just a fun thing, kind of to pick on some of the other soldiers.
play jokes or pass the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who were your buddies when you were in Vietnam?
Well, I had a number of different ones, but the two that I went over with was a sergeant and a corporal slots. The radio man was Terry Sattersfeld. He called him Hoss. He was a calf roper.
Mm-hmm.
And Tubbs Phelan, or Jim Phelan,
mm-hmm.
he was the sergeant, and he was a bronc rider.
Oh, gosh.
So the two of them were enjoyable to be around, ornery, and had to keep an eye on them.
That sounds like you were a ringleader.
And when we were back at base camp or something like that, you might be walking along, all of a sudden there's a rope around your ankle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they were always doing something like that.
That's cool. How did you meet them? You said you went over with them?
Well, I was in Fort Sill through mm-hmm. officers training school, and I was assigned back to Fort Riley, Kansas, where mm-hmm. the 9th Division was going to go out, and I was assigned to this artillery company, and Tubbs was the clerk for that battery, mm-hmm. artillery battery. And Hoss was a battalion runner, so I got to meet them right away. And how they got the positions they ended up with, Tubbs says if he's going over there, he wants to go where the action is. He doesn't want to be a clerk in a mm-hmm. battery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I says, well, I've got to find a volunteer to be a radio man, and another that I need to train mm-hmm. on how to call in artillery fire or more.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, how about me? And I says, well, yeah, but I'd have to ask, you know, mm-hmm. Whether it's possible or not.
Right.
He says, I'll make it happen. And I said, well, what about a battalion runner? And he says, how about Hoss there? Yeah, you know, he'd be a good radio man.
Right,
so that's
right.
How they had it all planned, and I fell right into it, and it was great that I did.
Right. Three Musketeers. You stuck together through most of the time, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Do you remember any stories about your time together? Do you have any fun things that you and your friends did together while you were there?
Well, I can't tell you all of them.
Right.
Because of this recording.
It's G-rated, so watch out.
But every once in a while, they'd be laughing or doing something after we stop after a long trek through the day, and they'd, Hoss especially, he would slip some of his sea rations in my backpack. I found out that I was carrying more weight than I should have been carrying. And they got a kick out of putting extra stuff in there. Once in a while, there'd be a rock or something heavy. So, but that kept them occupied as well as me.
Right, right. That's great. How often did you have downtime when you were there? What'd you do to pass the time?
Well, when you'd go out on maneuvers, you'd go out for a week to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be brought back into base camp when mm-hmm. another infantry company would be going out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I mentioned, but see, being a forward observer on the ground, you're with the infantry. And you're calling in the artillery back at the battery. So we're virtually infantrymen
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
also.
Did you play cards? Any games?
When we're back in, yeah, we played pinochle a lot.
Uh-huh.
Played pinochle a lot. Sometimes some of them would play poker. I never was that involved in it.
No.
In poker, I'm not a poker player.
You're not a poker player.
Pinochle was fun.
Yeah, good. When you did have R&R, did you travel outside of Vietnam? Did you ever like go someplace else for any trips or short excursions just for a little R&R?
I went to Bangkok, Thailand
mm-hmm.
for R&R for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What'd you do there? Okay, it's G-rated, but you got to spend some time away from the action.
Yeah.
And
you see another country and you
see
some of the history and how other folks are living.
Right,
and those
right,
things.
Right.
So it's always interesting to visit that.
Yeah, get out of the rut and
the
mundane and the mm-hmm. ordinary and the everyday. Right. So when you were in camps, you know, whatever, what kinds of food did you eat? What was it like there?
Almost all of it was sea rations.
Mm-hmm.
On maneuvers, it was all sea rations and stuff. We found over a period of time the best meals were when people would take their sea rations and mix them with other sea rations, and we'd make a stew. That was always better than tasting it individually out of cans. So.
Mm-hmm.
Back at when we was back at the base camp, it was different because there you got some hot meals,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
be just like watching MASH, you know.
Did you have any favorites, or was there stuff that you just really could not stand?
You get pretty hungry out doing
I
those
guess
things,
so. Yeah,
you know, and everything tasted better.
Right.
Yeah, although it wasn't what you preferred, it
right.
always tasted good.
Right, right. What was the longest time you ever went without a shower?
That'd probably be 3 weeks or more.
At a time?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What was your base camp set up like? So did you have showers and like a little tent with your meal hall or
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So you'd go out on maneuvers and come back in time or whatever, and then you'd get a shower and a hot meal and just kind of relax a little bit.
Usually back in at least a week. Sometimes, if you were mm-hmm. lucky, you'd be in a couple weeks.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Did you ever learn something about a fellow service member that surprised you? So, for instance, your friends Tubb and Haas, was there anything that you can think of that surprised you about them?
Well, I would say that, you know, first appearances of people, you judge how they are, and then you actually get to know them, and they're altogether different than what you suspected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Hoss and Tubbs were just unique people, but anybody that you met while you were over there, after you got to know them,
mm-hmm.
they were different, and it was always interesting to find those things out about people.
Mm-hmm. Did your main camp ever come under fire from the North Vietnamese?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the time.
All the time. What about nighttime? I think I remember you saying they would do something to keep you up at night.
Well, they had eyes on wherever we were going as uh-huh. well as we had eyes on them. And you'd have to bivouac at night, you know, you'd put out your listening posts and those things and
uh-huh.
be prepared for anything to happen. But they would... normally, it was they'd lob in a mortar round or two during the night sometime,
uh-huh.
or else they'd try to overrun the listening post or something. And those things would always wake you up. You couldn't rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, restfully, you couldn't mm-hmm. enjoy it, you know.
Right.
So that was their plan, and it worked to benefit their side.
Yeah. What was your job in Vietnam? So in our introduction, we said that you were an artillery forward observer. What does that mean?
Well, when they do come under fire, the enemy has matching equipment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They have mortars, and they have grenades, and they have automatic weapons,
mm-hmm.
and as well as us. The only thing that could keep you from being pinned down somewhere and getting into some troubling issues
mm-hmm.
would be artillery support.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we provided. We provided artillery support and, you know, in a moment's notice mm-hmm. whenever needed.
Right. You were an air artillery observer for your next mm-hmm. job. So what did that do? What did you do there?
Well,
you were in the air then.
Yeah. You was usually in a chopper or an L-19, which was a fixed wing.
Mm-hmm.
They were first used in the Korean War,
mm-hmm.
and they were a carryover from that. They provided support for
mm-hmm.
artillery from the eyes of the air. That's
right.
What you would be doing. You'd be flying over any operation that was going on,
mm-hmm.
or you would be searching, trying to find out anything you can see from the...
Mm-hmm.
I had the first pilot I ever had. He said to me, he says, you know, you're supposed to fly at 1,500 feet or higher
mm-hmm.
to avoid small ground fire.
Mm-hmm.
He says... you know, it's hard to find anything up here. He says, you married? I said, no. He says, well, neither am I. Mm. So we were flying at treetop level, and they'd fire at us, and then we'd know where they were.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Luckily, the rest of the pilots I was with weren't like that, but I was stuck with him for a while.
Oh my gosh. What about your job as a fire direction officer? What does that mean? And that was the last job that
Well, that's that you back did, on the ground again. So that's mm-hmm. basically being with the infantry all the time and calling in support again.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar as being in the air or on the ground, except that one you're flying and one you're walking.
Walking. What did you do? Like, what missions did you do, or things that you encountered when you were on the ground?
Hmm.
Like patrolling and stuff like that.
Well, that's usually exactly what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You were given a point to cover to see if you could find an object or troops or
mm-hmm.
any information to come back in to find out what the enemy's doing.
Right.
You're always patrolling to find that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And you come under fire a lot, mm-hmm. but, you know, I don't know how to really describe it more than that.
Yeah. Did you participate in any major operations?
I did, but I over the years, I can't remember any of them.
Mm-hmm. The details.
I'd be guessing if I came up with names.
Right, right.
But there was at least a half a dozen of them, big ones that we were involved in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You were awarded the Bronze Star during your time. And do you or are you able to share any details about that?
Well,
I know details get fuzzy after so long.
Yeah. I think that was because I was on the ground when mm-hmm. that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were a second lieutenant at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's an award based on how others saw you perform
mm-hmm.
during bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And somebody liked it well enough to put me in for it mm-hmm. and award it to me.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. When did you leave Vietnam? What was that process like? So when you left, what was the process like? Were you on a boat, a flight, you know, anything like that?
We were given a date that we were estimated to depart country.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember that I was close mm-hmm. to the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also remember being walking up front by the... When a company maneuvered, you always had point people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first ones to get hit or maybe hit a trip wire or...
Mm-hmm.
They're the first ones that would have... It was important for them to be watchful,
right.
Okay?
Right.
And I knew I was getting out, and I found myself right up there with them that last day. And then a helicopter landed
mm-hmm.
and picked up Lieutenant Stanerson. And said, "You're going home."
Wow. A relief. A happy day, I bet. When you were on the flight home, how many people were... It was an airplane, a transport plane, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it was large.
So how many soldiers were in the airplane with you?
Oh, there had to be 200 or more.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
With all your equipment, all your... No, belongings, no?
A lot of your equipment you left.
Oh, gosh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're going home, so you're just...
You don't need that
clothes
stuff.
You're wearing and some for the future days. And
right.
That's it. You
personal
know?
Effects, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. How many were on there? Lots? Hundreds?
A couple hundred or more.
When you left there, where did you land in the States?
We were supposed to land in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
But the weather was bad, and they diverted us. And I'm thinking it was Travis Air Force Base, but I'm not real sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a military base, mm-hmm. and it was a little rough with the situation even there, but mm-hmm. it was better than Oakland.
Right.
But the pilot was talking to everybody in the plane, saying that it might be a little bit rough, you know, we're gonna bring it in because we've been diverted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when the wheels touched, you could just everybody's yelling and happy and great to be home.
The best day of their life. I bet. Yeah. When you landed in Oakland and you sort of transitioned to the next step, whatever that next step was going to be, you spent some time in Arizona with some family.
Yeah.
Did you do anything special there before you went home to your parents?
Well, I didn't let the parents know that I was stateside yet.
Mm-hmm.
I knew my mother would want to get all the relatives together and have a party and welcome me home.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't ready for that.
Right. All right, so Pops, after you got home from the service, from Vietnam, and you've gotten back home, you're with your family and so on, and you had some time. How do you think your time in the military affected you?
Well, I was pretty much a terrible person. I drank a lot, smoked, caroused, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a good person to know. I thought that I was doing everything, you know, having fun and all that, and it really wasn't a good thing.
Mm-hmm. What did you do to fix that? What did you learn about yourself to?
Well, I knew I couldn't go on with a life like that, so you had to open up your eyes and study yourself a little bit and say, mm-hmm. Hey, I got to do some things to change my life. Mm-hmm.
So the last question we have for you is, what do you want your children and grandchildren to know about your military service?
Well, I know that they're inquisitive and want to ask questions and those things. And when they do, I'll answer as best I can. But there's a lot that I keep inside,
mm-hmm.
and I've never been one to, I hide a lot of things, mm-hmm. always have,
mm-hmm.
and with the war, that you carried through that way, still do that, but if, I just want them to know that war's not a game, war is a real thing. And if they need to be prepared if they're going to be a part of of something like that, they need to really be aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like I said, if they want to know anything, they can ask, and I'll answer or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I will try to oblige them with an answer.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I want to take a second to say thank you. Thank you for doing this interview. I know it was difficult to prepare for, and I want to honor you and the family for doing this. Over time, we've asked and we've thought in our heads, gosh, I wonder what happened. Why isn't he talking? And it took a while to realize wartime is difficult. It's difficult. And memories are difficult, whether you remember specific details or certain things surrounding that time, it's hard. And again, I thank you for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You mean the world to me, and you mean the world to the family, and that's why I call you Pops.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.